Can't wait.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
It was a good game. Both teams play hard.
About their defense. They can't stop a nosebleed.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
I got man hits like I was Rod Carew.
Yeah. Can't wait.
What happened offensively in that period?
Turnovers.
What about on the defensive end? They had their most productive quarter. What'd you see there?
Turnovers. Not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven.
Not the game that I go out there and die for.
This is grown man B.I.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Relax and take notes.
Hello and welcome to Can't Wait. I don't know how many of these we've done. Let's call this our 54th installment.
Sure.
With us as always, we have Matt Milner.
Hello.
We have Rusty Boulay-Stevenson.
Hello.
I'm Nick Provenis, and we are going to talk about the NBA Finals. We've been off of basketball for what seems like 6 months now because of this unprecedented week-long break between series. So we have the Golden State Warriors, we have the Cleveland Cavs. We hope they're getting healthy. We hope we have somewhat of a representation of these two teams that are going to square off for basketball's biggest prize, the Larry O'Brien Trophy. Let's go back and think a little bit about the whole playoffs as a bigger picture kind of thing. If you were to give this a letter grade, Matt Milner, what would you put the 2015 NBA playoffs at?
You know, right now, I think that it's at a B. I think that we've had some incredible series. I think in the first round, obviously, that Clippers-Spurs series was...
That's an A+.
That's an A+. That's, you know, one of the best first-round series, maybe the best.
I can't think of a better first round.
Yeah.
Boston, Chicago jumps to mind a little bit with all those crazy overtime games, but it didn't have anywhere near the talent that Spurs Clippers had.
Yeah, because this wasn't just a great series because the games were competitive. It was a great series because it was two teams that legitimately had championship aspirations.
Two of the five best teams.
Mm-hmm. And were playing at a high level, too. And the outcome, frankly, was surprising. You know, it was a compelling series. The second round was pretty fun as well. You know, in the sense that the underdog teams were kind of pulling their weight a little bit.
Hung around.
Yeah, they hung around. They made it, you know, an interesting series. There was a moment in time when, you know, we actually had to seriously consider, can the Grizzlies knock off the Warriors? Can the Bulls knock off the Cavs? I mean,
Washington.
Yeah.
Put a scare in Atlanta, right?
Absolutely.
Like, that was fairly good series.
And then we just got a total stinker of, you know, Western and Eastern Conference Finals, both in terms of the quality and competitiveness, but the bummer of all these injuries. You know, you hate to see that playing a role. Plays a role every year. It feels like it's been more of a factor this year. But that being said, we've gotten to the result that most people expected from the start, probably from a drama perspective, is the most interesting matchup.
I think it's easily the most interesting, right?
The overall, two correct teams are in the finals.
Yeah. For the casual fan, this is a great series. I mean, I think everybody's excited. It's easy to get behind Steph Curry. It's easy to get behind LeBron James going back to Cleveland. Casual fans like either of these teams, and both those guys seem decent, you know. I think that fans really can get behind it. It's a really great series.
I know that they did gangbusters TV ratings on that Warriors-Rockets series. And for whatever reason, that Game 5 got one of the biggest ratings ESPN's had for a basketball game.
I didn't know that.
I didn't expect that. That felt like encouraging for the future of the league because I think Warriors-Cavs is a dream come true for the NBA. I just feel like the way that the sports calendar has shaped up, this is clearly the dominant story. We're talking about this on a Sunday. We're not going to see Game 1 till Thursday. And it feels like this is still going to be like a block of SportsCenter news every single day leading up to the finals. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you get that with, you know, Atlanta versus Memphis or something. I feel like basketball fans obviously care regardless. But Warriors-Cavs is a dream scenario for all involved.
It's fresh. It's got the best players.
And I think it's a good reminder that we talk about big markets and small markets, but really I don't think that in today's NBA that matters quite
not
as
at
much.
All. Yeah.
It's not about, you know, like in baseball, the local TV money that you get is a big factor in it's determining enormous. Competitiveness. In the NBA, it's not as big of a factor just because of the way that the salary cap and the profit sharing operates. So there is more of a financially even playing field. And the fact that we've got Cleveland and essentially Oakland in the finals, and there's still a ton of excitement. There's expected to be huge ratings. It's not because of the cities. It's not because they have historically big fan bases. It's because of the compelling teams. It's because of the elite super-duper stars that are involved in it. And I think it's a great scenario for the league moving forward. You know, if Golden State is able to keep the core together, as we expect that they will, they could potentially turn into another premier destination team in the league, which would be great for the NBA if, you know, in the last few years you have the Clippers ascending from the cellar to be another destination franchise, the Warriors becoming a destination franchise right before they move over to San Francisco. I mean, that's good for the health of the league to have more of these exciting and, you know, quote unquote, big market franchises.
And it's funny because market is, it's a different conversation in the NBA. The stars drive the market. Somebody like Steph Curry is a market. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter where he plays. He could play in Milwaukee. He could play in the smallest city in
Oklahoma
the NBA.
Oklahoma City.
Yeah, Oklahoma City is a great example. That's a market because they have superstars. Mm-hmm. There's about 10 to 12 guys in the league at any given time that drive interest globally. There's one market in the league, and it's divvied up among these stars. Sometimes, like a team like the Hawks wouldn't necessarily drive the same kind of interest because as much as we all love Al Horford, I don't know how many Al Horford jerseys are being sold outside of Atlanta.
Right.
There's these handful of guys that will drive interest regardless of where they play. And that's an unbelievable scenario for the NBA's financial health going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, it really makes for fun television too, I think, right? And fun viewing. Ultimately, I kind of give it a B minus. I think the first round, aside from the Spurs Clippers, was pretty dreadful.
A lot of sweeps, a lot of gentlemen sweeps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wasn't there wasn't a whole lot there that was
the
all that
Eastern
interesting.
Conference as a whole.
Yeah, the Eastern Conference as a whole. Even Atlanta turned into be a shadow of what it seemed like. It seems, I mean, to me. And then the finals, the conference finals were pretty bad. And then the injuries, I think, hurt. You know, I mean, Love going down is really unfortunate for Cleveland. I really wish he was part of this game, but...
Now we get to have the fun conversation, though, of if they're better off without Kevin Love.
Yeah, because they have Tristan Thompson, who is playing himself into more money than you can pay a backup power forward.
Yeah, and, you know, they have also developed an identity, I think. And it's so funny, coming into the season, I never would have expected that the Cavs' identity would be that they were just going to destroy people on the boards. But that's been their recipe so far. And it's one that, you know, is kind of an interesting matchup against the Warriors, too. It's an interesting blueprint for being able to compete with them. You're not going to beat them if you play their game. You know, if you want to run up and down and shoot threes, they're going to blow you off the court. You want to get into just a grind it out, tough it out, half court type thing.
They
can do that. On the boards, they're potentially vulnerable. I mean, when they want to put Draymond out there as a four or a five, if he's competing with Mozgov and Tristan Thompson, that's tough.
Yeah, this is a nice segue into actually breaking down this series. Nicely done, Matt. So what we're going to do is see, because the way that these matchups shake out, we've talked ourselves into Cleveland being not just competitive, but potentially winning this series, thanks in large part to their size advantage. The way that they're able, they have stumbled upon, this was not the plan coming into the season, to just obliterate teams on the glass. And the way that you're able to snuff out those transition opportunities for the Warriors, where they just run out and shoot open threes and just blast you to death off the floor, that gets mitigated when they have to keep an extra guy or two back to deal with Thompson, deal with Mozgov. That's a real strategic advantage. But the thing about the way that they have to play now on offense is there's not a lot of space on the floor. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have to they just rely on LeBron and now an 80% of Kyrie Irving to break their guys down off the dribble and get their own open shots. They don't really swing the ball from side to side. There's not a lot of movement. I mean, they don't even do things like run a high pick and roll with Tristan Thompson, which seems like an unstoppable play.
Right.
For the most part, they run isolation. And it's this basketball that we hoped would no longer work with the rule changes, but they make it work by virtue of just having LeBron James being
sure will
better.
LeBron James.
Yeah. And so will the Warriors, like, forward-thinking offensive schemes be enough to poke holes in this bully ball that Cleveland has? Or will Cleveland have to adjust? Because while we've mentioned the Tristan Thompson-Draymond Green matchup being pivotal in the way this series goes, mm-hmm. what are the Cavs going to do about Steph Curry? Give me one thing that they're going to do to be able to even like keep a guy in front of him.
Yeah.
I don't know that they do, really, right? I mean, nobody's going to keep up with his kind of speed. Nobody can, and nobody has in the West, and that's got all the premier players that could do it, maybe. So, to me, it's going to be very tough. It's an amazing series, and I think it's almost impossible to predict.
In a way, though, I don't think that the series will turn on whether the Cavs come up with an answer for Steph Curry, because there is no answer for him. I mean, a guy who can pull up and shoot anywhere inside of 28 feet at will, there's no blueprint for guarding him. I think your only hope is that at a minimum, you rely on him to beat you with those crazy shots, and then you just say, well, you know what? We did the best that we could. But if you keep him from penetrating and creating opportunities for everyone else, turn him into more of a one-dimensional scorer.
That's your best shot, right?
Yeah. And then you focus on, stopping the more mortal players, so to speak. But if he's going to kill you with a 28-foot pull-up, I mean, there's just nothing you can do.
And this is interesting, because there's these subtle, like, 5 to 10% shifts in matchups where we look at that Rocket series, and people often point to Klay Thompson having a disappointing series because his field goal percentage was not what we're accustomed to. Mm-hmm. But he had to chase around James Harden that whole time. And James Harden is a nightmare to guard for anybody. And the way the Warriors decided to do that was have Klay take the brunt of that work, because he does the best job.
Right.
Klay Thompson doesn't necessarily have to expend that same kind of energy defending Iman Shumpert or J.R. Smith. You know, J.R. Smith can heat up with the best of them, but these guys aren't James Harden. So does that 5 to 10% defensive energy he gets to conserve result in those Klay Thompson explosions we've seen in the regular season, where he hasn't quite had one of those in the playoffs?
Right.
Now, if they go full on Splash Brothers, I think it's over in five. Mm-hmm. If those guys are just bombing threes and there's nothing that the Cavs can do, I mean, that's game over. Mm-hmm. But there's these weird little shifts in energy and attention that you can't use past performance to predict how it's going to go in this series. Mm-hmm. So do you think that the Cavs have enough to keep those guys occupied defensively to maybe turn some of those 7-for-12 three-point shooting games into 4-for-12?
Well, they've been excellent defensively throughout the postseason.
Yeah.
And I think...
Number one of the top defensive teams all year long.
Yeah. And they've kicked it into another gear here over the last couple series. I think that they deserve a lot of credit for the way that, even though the Hawks were depleted by injuries, especially by the end, for the first couple of games of the series, when they were closer to being at something like full strength, they were still just a shadow of themselves. And part of that, I think, was that they forced the Hawks out of their comfort zone. They weren't giving Korver the looks that he was used to getting. They were doing a better job of stifling, some of the off the ball movement that the Hawks do so well. So they are an excellent defensive team, but I think that one of the interesting challenges for them is going to be sort of the game of chicken and figuring out which team decides that it's going to be willing to adjust to the style of the other team.
Who's dictating the terms?
Exactly. Is this going to be a series where the Cavs just decide, we're going to roll with two bigs for as long as we can, and that's going to be our preferred lineup, and it doesn't matter what lineup the Warriors have out there, we're going to try to bully them inside and, hit the offensive glass and force them to, play more of Festus Ezeli than they want to play. Or is it going to be the converse, where basically it has to be Mozgov or Thompson, and you can't have both on the court because otherwise you're giving up open looks in transition?
They can't keep up at all.
And LeBron has to play four.
Right. Yeah. And I think that, going back to your Steph Curry thing, what will be interesting to see, for the last 2 minutes of every game, Does LeBron cover Steph Curry? Does he do that sort of Tony Parker, Derrick Rose thing he's done before, where they just put him on and say, you know what, hound him as, you know, 35 feet from the basket, do whatever you can to get him out of his spots?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think the Warriors are hoping they do that. Because Steph Curry is not that kind of player. He's not. He doesn't have to have the ball in his hands to destroy you.
Yeah,
yeah.
These other guys, like Derek, like the thing that we always remember is the way that he just shut down Derrick Rose completely. And that was the MVP year, Derrick Rose.
Yeah,
and he took him completely out of the game. Derrick couldn't get any kind of open look. What the Warriors can do, and what they're deep enough to do, is bring in a Sean Livingston, an Andre Iguodala. They can have the ball in their hands. They can initiate offense. And now Steph Curry is like hyper Ray Allen.
Yeah.
Do you want LeBron James trying to run through screens back and forth on the baseline, keeping up with this twitchy, nervy guy that no one can keep up with? And then you're asking LeBron to run the offense on the other end?
Boy, that's a really good point.
I don't think he's got the energy. I don't think anyone has the energy. I don't think human beings yet have developed the energy to be able to do that on both ends.
Yeah. You're saying just the last 2 minutes, though. You're not saying they'll...
But even so, I mean, I think that Nick's point is really well taken, that, you know, that's the counter that Steve Kerr has in his bag of tricks. Because if they go to that for the last 2 minutes in game one and it kind of works, maybe they go to it for the last 4 minutes in the next game, they try to expand it, and having that counter. I mean, the playoffs, coaching, it's all about counters.
Yeah.
You know, how do you respond? So outside of the stars, the superstars who, you know, we have touched on a little bit, who do you think is the most important player in this series?
Well, Draymond Green is important to everything the Warriors do. He's the guy that lets them be who they are. And if he's hitting threes and pulling Tristan Thompson away from the hoop where he can't be a demon on the defensive glass, and he's able to space the floor, maybe get these guys into a little bit of foul trouble guarding on the perimeter where they're not necessarily accustomed to guarding somebody. If Draymond Green has a big series and proves that he's a max level guy, which I think he is already, I think the Warriors in five. Tristan Thompson is obviously that important for Cleveland, but the thing about Cleveland, they're only going to play about seven, maybe eight guys max, so they have to just kind of roll with what they are. They don't really have much of a choice.
Right.
The Warriors get to, they have 9-10 guys easily that they can go to. There's like their break glass in case of emergency guy is David Lee.
Right.
I mean, Festus Ezeli would start on half the teams. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he would fumble the ball out of bounds every other play, but I mean, he would still
and
be.
He wouldn't be on the championship.
No,
team
but he's better than starting centers in this league. Mm-hmm. They just have so many other ways they can go. Sean Livingston can run the offense through the second quarter and obliterate you in a way that the Cavs don't have a guy off their bench that can kind of do that.
And he can switch on to threes. You know, and in the pick and roll. As
yeah,
well.
They have this defensive flexibility that I think the swing matchup here is, weirdly enough, your Alvin Gentry, new coach of the Pelicans, mm-hmm. and Ron Adams versus Blatt and Tyronn Lue, and who's going to win these adjustment battles?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I don't think the Cavs are going to win the adjustment battles
because
I just don't think they have enough adjustments.
Yeah,
no, I think you're dead on with that. Nick, I think that the Cavs don't have adjustments. I think if you just look at the coaching, I mean, Golden State has the best coach. It's two rookie coaches, but it's pretty obvious who has the best coach in this series, I think. And when it does come down to that, and when it does come down to Cleveland not having much of a bench at this point, they need J.R. Smith to really step up, right? He's going to have a couple games where he scores over 25.
Yeah, just
Cleveland
catches
has
fire.
A chance. Yeah, just catches fire, exactly. And he did it, and he will do it again. I mean, it's going to happen once, but he's got to do it at least two times for Cleveland to really start winning games in this series to win in seven, maybe, if they could.
Yeah, and if you look at the way that they have to use JR on the defensive end, he does not have much of an attention span.
Mm-mm.
The things that he can do defensively, because he's long and athletic, he can guard on ball okay, but they didn't trust him to do anything with Kyle Korver. They never trust him to guard anybody who's shifty off the ball.
Right.
I mean, if they have him out there guarding Klay Thompson for extended stretches, that's trouble. That's a problem. And Iman Shumpert is going to take the brunt of that assignment unless they decide that Kyrie just has no shot with Curry and they have to go Shumpert on Curry and do these. There's nowhere to hide Kyrie. And that's what they kind of lucked out in Atlanta that, you know, Damari Carroll was hobbled, and there was just places you could put a semi-healthy Kyrie Irving while maintaining the impact he's able to have on offense, which is gargantuan. He's an incredible offensive player. If you can't hide him defensively, especially when he's not at full strength, I don't know what they're going to be able to do. Are they going to be able to close games with him? Are they going to be able to run with him for like extended stretches where he's just getting killed defensively?
Yeah.
While J.R. Smith is also kind of a liability on that end. Tristan Thompson can't keep up on the outside. I kind of think he can, but let's say the Warriors go small and they said, you guys go ahead and stay big. We'll get killed on the glass. We don't care.
Right.
What happens if they go with that Draymond at the five lineup and they're just back screening and cutting and curling? Can the Cavs maintain any kind of defensive focus and intensity for long stretches of time? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. And I think that, as you said before, Nick, I mean, I just don't think that they have enough tools in the toolbox to be able to make those adjustments here. They don't have the luxury that the Warriors have of being able to play big or small. You know, even if they go with stretches where they've got LeBron at the four and they've got, you know, Shumpert and Smith out there, so they've got kind of the spacier version of their lineup, as you pointed out. I mean, there are some big defensive gaps if you take that approach. The Warriors also have the luxury of being able to have two guys who can guard LeBron. So in every lineup that they have out there, they can have Iggy or Draymond out there.
Harrison Barnes is going to take a lot of that assignment too.
You're right. Yeah absolutely. Yeah, and Harrison Barnes has a physical makeup that I think is really ideally suited because he's big enough that LeBron can't totally bully him.
He's stronger than you think. He's about 6'8", 230. Mm-hmm. He's an incredible athlete. And as he showed in that game five against Houston, he can take over a game.
Yeah.
And he's found his perfect NBA niche, doing exactly what he's doing on this Warriors team. I feel like there's no one that can guard LeBron.
Right.
But if you're talking about guys that can hang around, slow him down, bother him, he can't bully in the post the way he bullied Jimmy Butler or bullied anyone that Atlanta tried to throw at him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he can. I think he can succeed because he's LeBron James and he's the best player of his generation.
Right.
But I don't think he can bully them to the degree that he's been able to bully guys out in the East.
I also think that one thing that's been surprising to me is that, you know, LeBron, and it might be just by necessity because of injuries and everything, that their roster is in a state where he has to revert to being the kind of Superman LeBron. But it's remarkable to me what a marked difference there is between this year's LeBron and the Miami LeBron in terms of the style of play. You know, that he has gone back to being the isolation hero ball guy. And frankly, it's almost come back to bite them a couple of times when the shots aren't falling. He had some incredible games against Atlanta. You know, he's still been one of the best two or three players in the league during this postseason run. But he's doing it in a different and less efficient way. And I think it creates a smaller margin for error. And I'll be interested to see, against a team that is so efficient on both ends of the floor, does LeBron make another adjustment and go back to being more of the Miami LeBron, where he's facilitating out of the post, he's taking fewer threes, you know, he's just playing a smarter, more efficient game. The question is, do they just have enough horsepower for him to be able to do that without being the guy who's taking 35 shots a game?
Yeah, you know, when you look back to the year he took Cleveland before to the finals, that team always, they looked okay through up to the finals, but when they got to the finals, they generally looked scared to take shots. And this team isn't probably that bad, but that could really start happening where it's going to be hard for him to maybe even do anything but what he's been doing in the Superman LeBron. You know, I mean, I don't know that this team is talented enough to hang with what Golden State's got to throw at them, right? And especially what Steve Kerr's got to throw at them. It's just, it's a little bit lopsided except for the fact that it's LeBron James.
It's the best player in the league.
And
usually when you have the best guy in the series, you win. That typically is the way that the NBA has shaken out over the past, I don't know, 50 years. If you've got the best guy, you tend to win. LeBron's the best guy.
Yeah.
Is Steph close enough, though? To where is his unique to himself in the history of the NBA set of skills and shooting ability and shooting range and ball handling ability, is that gap close enough to where he's as unguardable for Cleveland as LeBron is as unguardable to Golden State? I think it kind of is. So in this last couple minutes, let's go around the table and give our predictions for this series. You go ahead, start with us, start with Rusty.
Well, I'm with you. I it's hard for me to pick against LeBron James is the only thing. It's almost like with Michigan State, it's hard to pick against Tom Izzo until he meets somebody that's going to have the bigger horses and the better horses. And that's what's going to happen, I think, is Golden State, right? In six or seven, and at probably six. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to imagine that LeBron can really pull this off against 10 guys when he's just got these, it's a ragtag group at best, you know, and I don't know. It's interesting to see what happens with Cleveland after this too, because they're not going to be able to pull in that much. He's going to have probably not as good a team next year. It's going to be tough to see, but
they're kind of in that Clipper spot where they're right against the cap. They have to bring everyone back and then hope that somebody wants to take a discount on the mid-level exception.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so I do. I think it's going to be tough for LeBron. I think he loses in six or seven. And
what do you think, Matt?
You know, I think it's going to be a less competitive series than people are hoping. I think it's going to be Warriors in five, and I don't necessarily think all of the games will even be competitive. I think that they'll win the first two games. I think Cleveland will win game three, and, you know, we'll have some hope that it'll turn into a series, and the Warriors will come back and win the next two. I just think that both in terms of the sample size, it's not as if the Warriors have just been dominating the playoffs. I mean, they've been dominating since the first week of the season. It's almost unprecedented for a team that's played as great as the Warriors have to not win. I mean, there's such a huge gap in their past performance there. But also, I think that both the home court advantage that the Warriors have is so pronounced, but then also I just think that, you know, you go position by position, and they've got the better matchup at every position other than, you know, whatever position LeBron plays.
Yeah, the LeBron spot.
Yeah, the LeBron spot. And even there, as we said, you know, the Warriors can close that gap better than most teams can. So I think that that the Warriors are going to just run them off the court.
So as our resident Miami Heat fan, are you having flashbacks to the way last year's Heat-Spurs series kind of shook out?
Yeah, I think that it's a very similar situation. The difference was that last year's Heat, you know, I think you knew at least because of the previous season that if everybody was healthy and played well, that there was a blueprint for beating that Spurs team. And the difference between the 2 years was that all of our old guys looked a lot older than the Spurs old guys. You know, so the contributions that they got out of Shane Battier and Ray Allen and Chris Anderson, those kinds of guys the year before, all of a sudden, those guys were not able to keep up with the Spurs. The shots weren't falling. And, you know, even with strong performances from, you know, the LeBron performers, they just looked like they were outclassed. And I think the same thing is going to be true here, that they're just the Warriors are just on another level. And no matter how great LeBron is, he can't close the gap of a great team.
Yeah, I think we're going to have this week off to talk ourselves into the Cavs. That's what you're going to see national media people do, because they have LeBron. LeBron's the guy that they've seen here. This is his fifth straight trip to the final.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
It's amazing. And you just, the way that sports conversation tends to go is you go with the guy that's gotten there before, and you never go out on a limb and pick the team that hasn't been there yet. They have to show you that they can do it first, and then people will pick them again and again and again. I think what's going to end up playing out here is everybody's going to see just how dramatic the gap has been between the East and the West.
Yeah.
This is the Cavs have gotten to the finals because they've been playing, you know, rookie level on Madden. Mm-hmm. And the Warriors are here because they've been playing all Madden. Mm-hmm. And not only have they been playing at a much higher degree of difficulty competition-wise, they've looked better. I mean, they've played better basketball than the Cavs had. The Cavs could have lost to, you know, any number of these teams out East, but they stumbled upon this big, strong, bullying identity that was enough to kind of wear these teams into submission out East. That's not enough. That wouldn't get you through the West. That wouldn't get you through the Spurs. That wouldn't get you through the Clippers. That might not even get you through the Rockets. Mm-hmm. This is the Warriors we're talking about. This is a team that is 10 deep with skill guys that can play any kind of style. And I think LeBron is going to have a very good series, but I think Steph Curry has at least one 50-point game in him. I don't see any way they're able to handle him unless Matthew Dellavedova does one of those like barrel Donkey Kong barrel rolls into his ankle that right. he's kind of trademarked. But health permitting, I think this is Warriors in five, and I think they win those last two games by 20+.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just think they blow them off the floor. You know what? That's what you do here on a sports talk show. You take hard opinions, you swing big, and it doesn't matter if you're wrong, because who cares?
Nobody's listening anyway.
So that's going to do it for segment one on Can't Wait. After this, we're going to talk a little bit of World Cup soccer, and who knows what else we'll talk about. Stick around here on Can't Wait.